This is a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network, WDPN, bringing you the very best in internet talk radio.
Atomic batteries to power turbines to speed. It's Bat Squad Radio here for episode 9 on the White Dragon Podcast Network. Folks, my name's Kev Elm, host of the show alongside my all-star compatriots here in the New Jersey Bat Squad. First, sitting diagonally to my right, which is a little different from usual, is he's New Jersey Bat Dave. He needs no introduction.
No, I don't. Hi, Kev El.
Hi. How you doing, Dave?
Good.
All right, and also seated right next to me over here, a little too close actually for comfort, is...
You forgot about Buster.
New Jersey Spider Denny. What's going on, buddy?
I love the smell of comics.
Yes, we are sitting around a table right now inhaling comic books because we have a very special guest this week. We've had some guests on Bat Squad Radio before. This is our first important guest, though. Sorry, Gene. Folks, we talk a lot about comic book conventions on this show. It's one of the backbones of Bat Squad Radio. Our love of them and our enjoyment of them and so many various cons that we've gone to over the years. But it takes a special kind of person to put one of these shows together. It takes a special kind of person to sit down and deal with all of the minutia of the backstage goings on.
What are you getting at? Who's here?
I am trying
here?
To build this up.
We have a guest?
Yes, folks. We are joined by the man behind the magic from the Big Apple Con. Folks, it is none other than the legendary Michael Carbonaro, also known as Mike Carbo. What's going on?
Hello there, everybody.
What's going on, Mike?
I am inhaling this 12-cent Marvel comic book. Actually, it's a quarter comic, but it's from the 60s.
Yeah, so you brought an impressive collection over here laying on the table.
This is just our reading copies. Yeah. Thank you for that introduction.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, guys. Thank you for coming out here in the rain and the snow and the sleet to record here with us this evening.
Like a postman, a man who produces conventions will go anywhere to promote a show.
So, Big Apple Con coming up very soon, next month, I believe. We're just about a month away, right?
Yeah.
A little bit more than a month?
Just getting the mailing out to all the customers tomorrow and our store mailings and our new postcard and guests. We've got a few special guests we're working on, but yeah, you know, you said something in the intro that kind of brings me back, and the whole thing about this show coming up is this is the 20-year anniversary, and I can't believe it.
Wow, so you started this 20 years ago.
In the basement of a church.
Wow, so that's cool.
1995 was the first one.
Actually, it was 96. 19 and a half years. Oh, but 96. Okay, we're close enough. Okay. As Stan Lee would say, enough said.
Right. But yeah, so you started that first year. What was it like? What brought on the idea?
Actually, it was snowing. And there was a convention at the New York Coliseum.
Okay.
And at the last minute, it's a Wednesday, and there's a Thursday setup, and it's a big convention Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the New York City, which doesn't even exist anymore, the New York Coliseum. Mm-hmm. Now it's the Mondrian Hotel, among other things, and the big Jazz Lincoln Center. Anyhow, so at the last minute, the convention, there's a buzz. No convention. What? Something happened. The floor plans weren't approved. The convention couldn't make it, so the promoter at the last minute decided he couldn't run the show. Well, we spent the next 2 hours with the promoter trying to find an alternate space. Once he gave up, we said, we're going to do it. Myself, along with Vincent Zerzolo and Vincent Guiducci, another Italian, the three of us,
nice
found
paisans.
The St. Paul Church Auditorium. Literally, it was blocks away. You could see the steeple from the Colosseum area. And it was a real, real snow coming down, ice. We had no idea what it would be like. Big Apple, it was called the Church Con. The show must go on. And that Saturday morning, we opened the doors of this church basement, and whoosh. People lined up around the block. The dealers that hadn't turned around and gone back made tons and tons of money. People came and
That's
said,
great.
You saved the day. You became the superheroes. I wasn't ready to run a comic convention in New York. I had run other things. I had produced a rock and roll show in New York. I had done doo-wop dance parties at Roseland. I actually opened Roseland. I love putting things together. But a comic show, I always sold comic books.
Of course, yeah.
So here it is. me and Vinny, we bought our third partner, Vincent Guiducci, out right away. And Vincent from Metropolis, Vincent Zerzolo, and I decided we're going to run conventions. And I think it was Vinny who said, hey, I think Big Apple is a good name for the show.
Yeah. And that's so great how you just kind of fall into these things. And then all of a sudden it just becomes your life for the next 20 years.
Jesus. You said it. Or should I say holy moly?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it was great. And really, it was just all that accolades and all that positive energy that we got from the fans. And like you said, comic books for me as a little kid. Phil Suling, who ran the New York comic book conventions, he was my mentor. He was the guy that started conventions as I know them in New York. He ran them at the Statler Hilton Hotel, which became the Hotel Penn, the Hotel Pennsylvania, which is where the show that we're having in a month is going to be at.
Yeah, that's great.
So he was my mentor, and I love the shows. It is the backbone of the comic world because the fans get to eat it. They get to meet the people, whether it's the artists, whether it's the celebrities, whether it's the people selling the comic books and other fans that are have a like interest in this fantasy collectible super experience world.
I want to take you back to your childhood.
Young
Mike Carbo.
You're taking the way back.
My superhero trunk.
But I do want to say something. I've known this guy forever, and we haven't really met officially until right now.
But you've known him, what were you like, outside his windows?
He was like stalking him left
and
right.
No, I've been going to Mike Carbo shows since the 90s.
So you didn't know him, you knew of his shows. You went to his shows.
No, we would talk.
You know him in the way that I know Johnny Depp.
You know everybody that comes to my shows knows me, and it's cool.
Yeah,
I love it.
He's more than just a guy running the show.
The first time I quote-unquote met him was at the Asbury Park Bowling Alley.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
The very first Asbury Park Comic Con.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And
cool.
We bought posters and comics from you.
I remember.
I think Robert Bruce was running that
yes,
show.
Yes, he was.
He was a good friend of mine
but
as well.
The thing is, Mike is not just a guy that promotes and organizes and throws shows.
Right.
You are, and I've said this to you guys for years, you are the Mick Jagger of Comic-Con promotion on the
yes.
East Coast.
Thanks
and
a
you
lot.
Look the part, and you're a bundle of raw energy, and you make things fun. But young you, the young version of you,
with the black hair.
Who were your favorites?
Now it's wavy gravy.
That's all right. But were you a DC guy? Were you a Marvel
Always
guy?
Always Marvel. What can I say? Love DC, love Batman, but
Daddy,
I was
you
Marvel.
Finally have a friend on the show.
Yes. Finally found someone that looks Marvel.
Now, I can even break that down to people. I believe you can take that in political terms, okay? I believe the Marvel guys, the DC guys, a little more black and white, no shades of gray. Okay, they're the Republicans. So the Marvel guys, the Democrats,
I'm comfortable with that.
They're more colorful. Mm-hmm. They got all kinds of different ideas. They
problems.
Have problems. They can't figure it out.
Oh,
they're the Democrats.
Funny.
That's great. Right.
So, and literally, if you go back, I actually just bought a collection from a lady, and she goes, wow, they're all in the closet. I opened the closet, and I could smell it just like we were. It was old 60s comics, and I go up and fortunately,
it's more into the mic, Mike.
It was all DC comic books. Go, your husband was a Republican, right? She goes, yep, staunch Republican. I'm the liberal in the family. So there you go. But really, it may sometimes hold true. But yeah, always Marvel. They asked me when I was 11 years old who's my favorite character. I remember saying, Reed Richards.
Really?
To the top of the Empire State Building.
Wow,
I have never in all my years, all my 29 years, have I ever heard anyone say their favorite comic book character is Reed Richards.
I agree.
The smartest guy in the house. He's got the cool chick wife.
Yeah,
he did marry the blonde bombshell.
And he's got these super abilities to do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And go anywhere and do anything, so to speak.
And he's the patriarch of Marvel's first family of superheroes. But now he is now in the new movie he's going to be like a teenager, which is kind of weird. Did you see
it? Yeah. Trailer yet? I'm going to do the George Lucas thing. I'm going to wait for the movie to arrive and see it. That was my first comic book that I bought way back in the Phil Suling conventions. Fantastic Four number one. That was the one we all.
For how much? How much did you pay?
$12.
$12.
Wow.
FF number one?
Yep. Fantastic Four. And I remember my parents lent me the $10, and it was in 1970. Okay? It was in 1970 or the 71 convention that I went. And, Spider-Man was half as much as the Fantastic Four. It was always Fantastic Four.
Right.
Now
that's great. Now we live in an era where they've canceled the Fantastic Four comic book.
Inhumans and Galactus and Claw and Black Panther, who were all in the FF books, are coming back. So it's going to reignite that whole franchise.
Exactly.
I want to get back to 96, 97. Now, you've taken over this mantle of producing and organizing shows. When do you feel it starts catching fire? People are going, wow, this guy has got it going on.
You know, that's interesting, too, because Vincent, my partner at the time, and myself, we would really bang our heads and get out there promoting this thing. And it was a couple thousand people the first show. And then, like, we started to charge admission. It was free admission the first show. Then we started to charge admission. It was $5 for the church basement. And then I think we got 1,200 or 1,500 people for the second show. And, man, when are we going to get over that 2,000 threshold, you know, and 3,000? And we slowly kept. And I remember some days it was 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and I'd look, and the line would be gone already, and they'd be inside, and I actually would go into the crypt in the back of the church and cry. Wow. I remember I would cry, but I'd come out like an half hour later, and I'd see up, and there's the line again. It started, and there were people lined up, and then it just kept coming. And we put our heart and soul into it. We promoted it everywhere we could find, every day. I mean, if you add up all the hours that you put into it, it's just impossible to put into monetary terms. I love producing things, watching something come from nothing. But that was it. And I mean, it really started. And then there was this accident of birth, as I call it, where moving out of the church was not something I had actually planned. I would have probably kept it there still now if I had my choice. But I had hired or got a wrestler, a lady wrestler, who had an X-rated past coming to the show, which, well, I kind of knew about, but I thought, okay, that was in the past, and here you go. Well, having her in a church basement was not the right idea.
Who was the wrestler?
That was
April Hunter?
No. We'll leave that alone for now, okay?
It would have been April Hunter.
We'll go with that.
It's Anyhow, Fabulous Moolah, wasn't it?
I know Jasmine St. Clair, and there you go. That's
I
the name.
Fabulous Moolah had a checkered past.
So there you go. But anyhow, I mean, she had been a pal of mine way back. She used to sell toys in the 80s and 90s, okay? So next thing I know, I get a letter from Cardinal O'Connor. I mean, I was raised Catholic. I grew up in school. I thought the lightning was going to strike me. You can't have the show. Who are you? Who is the Big Apple? You know, what is this going on? And I called the church. You can't do this 2 weeks before a show. You can't cancel my show and tell me I have nowhere to put it. I mean, people are coming. Boba Fett's coming, you know. Jeremy Bullock, among other things.
Right. The original Boba
Fett. And then they just said, that's it, you can't have it. And do I sue the church? No, I couldn't do that. Do I try it? So I had to look for another space. And lo and behold, somebody, a friend of mine, actually came to me and said, Mike, I found it. And it was the Penn Plaza Pavilion in the Hotel Pennsylvania. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it had pillars and it had things in the way and it had this and that. But there it was, a non-union hall in New York that could fit thousands of people. And accident of birth, Big Apple started to rise. The cake started to go up. The air was put into the tire.
I want to say something. You brought up a great point about that young lady with the shady past. back in the early pioneer days of Comic-Cons, comic books and the nerd whole the whole world was, it wasn't seedy, but the first time I met Adam West and Burt Ward, guess who they were seated between? They were seated between Tracy Lords and David Carradine, the late, great Carradine. There was a lot of times you go to a Comic-Con and there was adult fare there. There was just, it was a raunchy thing if you went to the wrong aisle. And now it's, you know, you've got these bigger shows and it's become very homogenized. But in the early days, you don't know what you walk in when
sometimes
you go to a show.
I see that they lock them away sometimes. Like they put them in their little
we actually had that. We had a screen at one show and it was the X or alternate rated area.
That's where you got the lap dances. You
know, David Carradine was awesome. I had him at a guest. Thank God I had him at a guest right between Kill Bills. And I swear I pumped him all night. Come on, you got to tell us about what's happening in Kill Bill 2 the next day. And he goes, nope, you're going to hear it. And so lo and behold, he had a whole soliloquy about superheroes in it.
Wow.
Nevertheless.
Fantastic
but
speech.
He was great. I mean, he came, he played the guitar. He hung out. You want him to play guitar? Okay.
You know,
I mean, he was so just easy to go in.
You know what I found so telling about his performance in Kill Bill was they had the scene that they later deleted where it was a scene that was supposed to be in the middle to show you what a badass he was. It was going to be him fighting this other guy in like a Japanese street, like a samurai sword fight. Tarantino took it out because he was like, you didn't need it. His performance was so quietly fierce that you just knew. You knew he was the ultimate
Well,
badass.
In the early 70s.
You never had to even put that one in.
We're a year or two older than him, but in the early 70s.
Just a bit.
Yeah, it was Bruce Lee and it was David Carradine. Mm-hmm. And you picked, it was like Yankees and the Mets. Who do you like better? Carradine wasn't even Asian.
I like remember we went out to dinner with him that night after the show, and we kept drinking, and he kept going, and it was a two-day event, so I had to get back the next day, and I maybe regret not going out and hanging out with him all night. And I remember him saying, "And you know, I'm never going to give up all my vices." No, he didn't. I've actually used that line, but with a little bit of, you know,
God bless
thought behind it. So God bless for David Carradine. Yeah.
Now, late 90s, with the shows you're running, who are the one or two or three of the big name guests with a little bit of marquee value where you realize things are going good?
Well, we've had Malcolm McDowell. I mean, you know, Alex. Alex from Clockwork Orange.
We love Malcolm McDowell.
He's one of my heroes, anti-heroes.
He's a badass.
I thought he was actually in a movie racked with flaws. I thought he was an excellent Loomis in the Halloween reboot.
Sure, absolutely. It's hard to follow Donald Pleasance, but he did a great job.
He did,
unless you're James Bond. Okay. let's see, who else? So Lori Petty, okay, Tank Girl, she was cool. Carmen Electra, she just walked around and looked good.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
George Romero was great. I mean, George Romero was really cool. Went out to dinner with him, got drunk, and he told stories about the mall. And the Day of the Dead, was that the second one, right?
Yeah, second one.
The Dennis the Zombie guy.
That was when they rented the mall, and he just said, they said, we're going to go to a mall for like 2 days, right? We're renting that. It was a vacant strip mall. They ended up spending like 2 weeks there, but he told us great stories. It was awesome. Hayden Panettiere, Kristen Bell, that was kind of the peak.
Oh, nice.
Big Apple.
I went to that show.
Big Apple, that was my.
They took you up in an elevator to see the girls.
Finest show, man. We took over the whole hotel. It was like the Baxter Building. And I've always wanted to do that. I love the idea of just taking over the 18th floor, the 6th floor. Yeah.
Was that
we'll do
the
something
one?
On the first floor.
Val Kilmer, was he at that
Val
one?
Kilmer was
that
at
was
that
a
show
great
too.
Show.
Val Kilmer, yep.
I think that was the show where I had my incident with Neil Adams.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Neil Adams or Val Kilmer's story? Which comes first?
Val Kilmer.
I'll tell you my Val Kilmer story. Val Kilmer was one of the first super guests that we started to get. And that was when we moved it to the Penn Plaza Pavilion. So we started calling it the National when we did a 3-day event there on right around Thanksgiving time. So I've got Val Kilmer coming. And oh my God, you know, you got to treat him like royalty. He's going to be great. So I'm meeting him at his hotel on the Friday at 5:30. And guests are lined up waiting for his autograph at the show already. You know, and they're literally lined up around the block waiting for Val Kilmer to come in. So I get there. All right, he's not coming down. It's 6 o'clock. All right, he's a rock star. It'll take him a little longer. I go. I find I'll be down in a bit. He gets down at 6:30. This time, the limo I had waiting for him says he's got another appointment. I say, no, you can't leave. The limo driver leaves. I'm throwing money at him. He won't stay. So I find the doorman. I say, listen, you have to get me a taxi. It's New York City rush hour. Okay, taxi's not easy to find. Anyhow, he finds it. Val Kilmer comes down. I say, we're going to do this the old-fashioned way. We're taking a taxi. I thought he'd turn around and leave. He said, sure, no problem. Sings Doors song in the back of the cab the whole the way. Says he stopped drinking when he was at the Sherry Netherland Hotel and Underdog flew by. That was the Thanksgiving Day parade.
Oh, nice.
he said, that was it. I mean, Val Kilmer was absolutely awesome. And Tombstone, of course, was his, you know, the height of heights. And everyone comes up to him and says, you should have won for that. Val Kilmer was amazing. He came back again. He says, Mike, you're running a show. I want to be there. And came back a year or so later.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But these were all amazing shows because not only do you have the hierarchy of comic book greats, you've got the actors. You've got, there's some of the monkeys. There's these actors. There's these icons.
It becomes a pop culture event, not just a comic book event.
Yes, which we all take for granted now. But this is the guy that actually made these things happen.
Well, because of him, I actually got to see Chandler Riggs for the first time.
That's right.
Really?
Yep. And Adney Miller.
Nice.
Adney Miller, too.
And so Dave, your Neil Adams story that took place.
Let's take a deep sniff of a Neil Adams comic book.
Okay. Here we go. But, here's two Adams comics. There you go. There's one
there
for you.
There we go.
As we all know about Neil Adams, the man needs no introduction, but at a time in the mid to late 60s where
you
comic...
smell the talent.
Yeah, where DC had very little going on. A young upstart named Neil Adams comes in, and they put this guy to work. He's drawn covers for Westerns, for horrors, for I Love Lulu, anything that DC had at that time. Jerry Lewis covers. Well, all of a sudden, they put him on Dead Man, Brave and the Bold, Batman, and as a little kid, I'm like, oh my God, this is this is real. Batman looks real, because back then in the 60s, Batman was Adam West and the show was silly and all. And now the way Neil Adams drew and still draws, it's gritty realism. So for many, many years, I felt I'm too cool for Comic Cons. And then finally I took the plunge.
Right.
And I was younger. And
You've never been too cool for anything.
No. But in my mind, I was.
We're all too cool.
But at the time, the night before one of Mike's shows with Neil Adams, and it may have been the one with Val Kilmer, the night before I went out, I had a few too many drinks. And I have what we call a delayed hangover. Mm-hmm. I wake up and I'm fine. A couple hours later in the day, I'm not fine.
Boy, that can be really interesting.
It was. Because
that means you woke up and were probably still drunk.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but the train ride in, I was okay. I made some changes in my schedule. I get there, and these shows are they were packed. They're popular shows, and you have a lot of body heat coming off. I'm standing in line to finally meet Neil Adams, my childhood hero.
First time ever. Oh, wow.
And I'm about four people from him, and I start percolating. The hangover's coming back. And I literally ran across the room and vomited in a wastebasket, a giant receptacle.
Okay.
And then went back and met Neil Adams.
Did you get him to autograph the receptacle?
No.
Did somebody hold your place in line, or did you have to go back to the back of the line?
No, I went back in line, and it was just a wonderful experience. But I wiped my chin. I'm like, oh, I love you so much, Neil Adams.
Every time we go to a Comic Con now, we see a wastebasket. I go, hey, Dave, you got a barf in there real quick?
Yeah, we feature Neil Adams in our projects as much as we can, but you probably have a lot better Neil Adams stories.
No, I just love Neil Adams, and as a fellow New Yorker, he's from Brooklyn, I'm from Queens.
Yep.
I just got to say thank you to Neil Adams, because literally when we moved from the church basement, he never came when we were in the basement. But when I moved to the Hotel Pennsylvania, he says, Mike, I think you're going to have a good show here. I want to support you. And he literally did. And he came, and he was at that first show, and Neil Adams brought a big following and really helped build us. And I cannot thank him enough for that. So they are always my friends and my pals, and anything I can ever do for them, he's my... one of my artist hero / gods that we have in this business.
And he's a real personality. He's a rock star. Because if Neil likes you, he likes you. But if he doesn't like you, you're going to know that Neil Adams doesn't like you.
Right, like he doesn't like you.
No.
He cringes when you walk up to him.
He does cringe, but he likes me.
My favorite line.
He cringes lovingly.
Says there's magic in these fingers as he wiggles his hands. So that's great.
When I see him, I think I'm going to do that to him.
You do that, you'll get it.
Yes. With Neil Adams, I feel like he is just a guy that loves to give back to the industry so much. I mean,
Look
what he did for Siegel and Schuster. I mean, he didn't do that. He wasn't getting paid to back them up, but he went to town for those guys.
He shamed those comic book companies into treating their artists and their writers and their creators better.
And I heard a phenomenal, it's like a 3-hour interview with Neil, and he was talking a lot about the contracts that they signed back in the day, and how you don't get, you're not entitled to the things that most creators in any other medium are entitled to, and how he fought and still fights to this day for that kind of stuff.
Still does.
He created John Stewart, the African American Green Lantern. He was the first. That's his creation.
He's done a lot of stuff, and I want to talk about other people too. I don't want to make it too Neil centric.
That's okay, but
Neil knows how awesome he is.
Neil also came, and we're talking about Big Apple.
Okay,
and I get Frank Miller for the first time at Big Apple.
Nice.
And Neil says, and Frank says, no, I'm not coming unless Neil Adams is doing an interview with me.
Wow.
So we have it on tape. I've got Neil Adams, and I'm going to get that for you, and we'll be able to
be
put
great.
That on your podcast twice.
That'd be great.
Neil Adams, and he called him his uncle. Frank Miller says, you're my comic book uncle, my godfather, my comic book godfather. And and it was amazing. And the two of them started talking. I had no idea what they would do. Actually, I was dressed as the Joker, and I remember I introduced them, and it was great. And they just went on from there. The next thing you know, it was just magic. Awesome. Hour.
That must have been such an amazing interview to sit in on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is. And the first time I ever met Jim Steranko was at one of your shows. And he was set up right next to John Romita Sr.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had both Romitas.
Both Romitas.
Junior and Senior.
Sure.
So it's like when you go to one of these shows, you just stand there and you just look around in a full circle and you're like, holy shit. There's some awesome people.
He just
here.
Cursed.
He did.
He just cursed.
We're going to edit
Holy
that
moly. Let's do it again.
Shazam.
So, you mentioned something about the celebrity and wrestlers, so to speak, which we're going to have a couple of cool ones at this upcoming event. Who do we have? Roddy Piper. Jake the Snake Roberts, right?
Which I'm excited for.
I just had. So as people that listen to the show know, I am a professional wrestler. Have been for about this is my 12th year as a wrestler.
What's your pseudonym?
And, let's go arm wrestle right now.
That would be wrestling's fake, Mike.
You know, I have no upper body strength.
I'm the Dark Angel Vincent Valentine. Have
okay.
been for 12 years.
Oh, really?
But
cool.
And he just wrestled Jimmy Snuka.
I just wrestled. Yeah, I just wrestled the Superfly. And beat him too, by the way. But just said. But they
you beat the Iron Sheik.
No, I wouldn't even try.
Yeah, right.
But the by the way, best Twitter feed to ever follow was the Iron Sheik because it's glorious.
He would come to the show and just yell at people.
Oh yeah, that's the thing with the Iron Sheik.
We had to throw him out. We literally picked him up and threw him out. It took four guys.
Great.
That's funny.
But the two wrestlers that I actually studied the most as a young wrestler coming up in the business were Rowdy Roddy Piper and Jake the Snake Roberts, because I've always been a talker, and they're the two greatest talkers in the history of the business are Roddy Piper and Jake. Jake had this way about himself where, like, you know, Roddy was like, why you know something, Hogan, yeah. And, like, it would all be like, you know, that's my Piper impersonation. But Jake was just
fine,
like,
by me.
Like, Jake would sit there and he'll tell you the story like the scorpion and the toad, but he'll do it with the snake instead, and it, like, he just would speak in such a calm monotone, and you were scared of him. And at the end, it's just like, you know, as like the snake bites the frog as they're going across the river, and the frog asks why. He's like, "Because I'm a snake." And you're just like, whoa. Like, I'll never forget. Jay Lethal handed me a Jake the Snake best of tape. He goes, "Watch this." It changed the way I look at the business. I mean, he's absolutely, and he's gotten into such amazing shape. Have you seen him recently since he started doing the DDP yoga?
No, but I will soon.
Oh, he turned his Diamond Dallas Page turned his life completely around.
I love DDP.
Jake was on death's door. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah, it hurt. He had a little bit of rough time going on.
Score of substance abuse problems,
yeah.
Alcoholism. And he got on this DDP yoga program with Diamond Dallas Page, another wrestler. And you'll be shocked when you see him. Shocked. He looks amazing.
Awesome. Have you worked with Roddy before?
Yeah, had Roddy. I was packed, man. We had Roddy at a show.
He's great with
the fans.
We had
Roddy for a show when he didn't arrive. He had Roddy for a show and he did arrive. And there you go. So that was fun, you know. Yeah, you talked about the snake and the scorpion. Isn't that the same joke as in the Killing Joke? What the Joker tells at the end?
I think so. Yeah,
with the flashlight, and you walk across the flashlight to the other building instead of jumping. He says, "No, you'll turn it off halfway there."
Right.
Right. Okay.
Yep. Hey everyone, it's your good pal Kev from the White Dragon Podcast Network, shamelessly interrupting your enjoyment of this tremendous WDPN podcast you're listening to. To basically shill to you. Bear with me here, folks. This will be brief. I know what you're all thinking. You're loving the tremendous audio spectacle currently delighting your auditory senses, and you're lamenting the fact that the stars of the WDPN are only around for you 1 hour per week, right? Well, you're wrong. We've got a whole slew of shows that will delight, entertain, and captivate you all week long. And the best part is that we've got something for everyone. Are you looking for something your whole family can enjoy? Well, look no further than Two Men and the Mouse, the flagship show of WDPN focusing on the magic and wonder of Walt Disney World. Pete Mandel and myself share our love of the most magical place on Earth as we count down the latest and greatest news of the week before diving deep into a featured topic. Maybe you're a fan of geek TV and movies. You love the world established in shows such as Arrow, Gotham, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Doctor Who, and so many more. Well, for you, we've got the Geek Watchtower. I'm joined each week by a special guest host as we review the latest installments of our favorite geek-centric media. Sometimes, though, the universe of geek pop culture can be a little too all-consuming and you need to go broad. That's why we've got Bat Squad Radio, hosted by the YouTube comedy trio known as the New Jersey Bat Squad. You'll hear me as Kev L, along with Bat Dave and Spider Denny, detailing the goings-on throughout all of geekdom. Perhaps you're more of a sports entertainment fan. Well, WDPN's got that covered as well. Step inside the world of professional wrestling with Ring Ropes Radio, the all-new pro wrestling podcast of WDPN. Kevin Clark and I present to you all the viewpoints of two 10-plus years veterans of the wrestling business and supplement that with special interviews with the stars of wrestling's past, present, and future. Want more information on where you can find this plethora of internet audio entertainment? Well, head over to Facebook.com/WD Podcast Network and give us a like for all the latest news and new shows and episodes. Okay, I'm all done. I told you it would be quick. Well, this wasn't exactly quick, but whatever. Back to the show. Enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the White Dragon Podcast Network.
I want to ask you about something. Two words. Stan Lee.
Ah, yes. That's been a big guest of yours in the past.
And there it is. Why did Mike retire and unretire from comic conventions? Stan Lee is the reason why.
Oh, dear.
I'll tell you.
Really?
Uh-oh. Okay. So this is the unexpurgated. Actually, there's all kinds of things that I could talk about. And believe it or not, having done this 20 years, I didn't even realize it. And all of a sudden, Vinny Zerzolo, my partner, whom I bought out around 2000 for the Big Apple and started doing, and he started running Metropolis Comics in New York, and has done an absolutely incredible job creating a comic book company and an auction company and everything else. After he said it's the 20-year anniversary, I says, no, it's not possible. I really had not started even counting. And right. There it is. Here we are. So I'm actually thinking of a book called Smashing Them Apples. We'll see. But
Stan Lee comes to you, or you go to Stan Lee?
I'd always wanted to have Stan Lee. I mean, he is, the guy. I actually met him in an elevator once in
New
York.
He's Zeus of comics.
You're going to go places, kid. I mean, he says this to everybody, Right? Right?
He's a very inspirational guy.
So, I have a picture in 1967. I was 10 years old, and I called in to Bob Grant. He was on a Bob Grant show, and he was doing some kind of interview with him, and I got an autograph when he sent me a picture. This is without my beard. He said... So I was friends with his agent, and I said, I got to bring Stan in. And it was an amazing amount of money to bring Stan Lee in for a day in New York, but I had to have him. And so it started to steamroll, and all of a sudden, my God, it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it was going to be awesome. I'm like, well, Stan Lee's getting all these accolades. What's Mike going to do? So I said, well, you know what? I've done this for so long. Maybe I'll just retire. This will be my last show. So I said, you know what? That's it. So along with Stan Lee... Mike's last comic convention, and it made news. I really didn't think it was such a big deal. Mike, are you really retiring? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And so the show was such a success. It was super. And then the next year comes along, and people are saying, well, Mike, what are you doing? You going to run the show? No. You know what? 2 or 3 months before the show. All right, I'll do the New York Comic Book Marketplace again, but that'll be it. And lo and behold, we're still going strong, but...
I think a big problem now with a lot of the bigger outfits is, I'm not saying that they're stealing guests, but they're locking people into contracts,
mm-hmm.
and that's become difficult. Me and Denny, the only show in the last decade that we regret not going to was your Stan Lee show, because we didn't make the effort. I don't know what we were thinking. Stan Lee's like 88 right. years old at
no,
that time.
No, he's going to be 94 this year.
But at the time, it's like, I'm like, you know what? Well, after your show, and I say this to Denny all the time, I said, your show was what made everyone realize, holy crap, Stan Lee is not immortal. So, and then right after that,
oh,
all of a sudden,
which
is fine by me. I hope he lives forever. But mm-hmm. right after that show, people started up in the ante, like, oh, the VIP package for Stan Lee is $250 and this and that and all. And it's like, that's not how shows were. You know my friend Nick and Anthony? Right. Back in the 80s, when Stan Lee didn't even look like Stan Lee, you could just hang out with Stan Lee for a whole afternoon.
Well, he did look like Stan Lee. That's just what Stan Lee looked like.
No, but you could. But there was a time when Stan Lee didn't even have a mustache.
There you go.
In the inside cover of Amazing Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Fantastic Adventures.
Okay.
The reprint one.
Right. But you mean a Fantasy Masterpiece.
Fantasy Masterpieces. Stan Lee did not look like
Stan
Lee. Because he's Stan Lee Lieber, right?
Larry Lieber's his brother. Larry Lieber is his brother, whom I've had as a guest. The two of them were there together.
I want to ask you another thing. We'll move on. But Stan, there's Batman and Robin. No, there's two equals. There's Stan and there's Jack. Did you ever meet Jack Kirby?
One of my...
regrets?
If that's what you want to call it, but something that I never had happen was I never actually sat and met with Jack Kirby. And I'm not sure why.
He was a West Coaster back then.
And I remember when he passed away, I believe, was it 93?
94,
right? 94?
Yep.
We actually were doing something. No, maybe it was later. It had to be later because I remember putting up a big sign, Long Live Jack. And we put it up and we got all these artists to sign it. And I put it away in a box. And it's in a box somewhere. And Vinny's been asking me, where is that sign?
But if Jack was to live past the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, and now the Avengers. Theoretically, if Jack Kirby was still alive, what would he think about his characters that he co-created with Stan Lee being billion-dollar franchises? Would he be happy with what they're doing with his characters? Because Stan was... tough.
On a monetary basis, tough. I'm not sure, because he would have had to get paid for it and felt that he got what he deserved. But on an intellectual, artistic level, I know what Joe Simon, I had heard him say, because I got to be really another good,
Kirby's
wonderful thing.
Kirby's first compatriot.
Yeah, about that, about the show. And
Captain America.
I'll tell you another good Jack Kirby story, even having not met him, that Joe Simon gave me. But I remember Joe saying, wow, the Captain America movie. We actually saw it with him in California. He said it was great. He loved it, and he loved the way they did it. So I think they would have loved it. Captain America and the Avengers movie. Spider-Man, I'm not so sure.
But okay. but Kirby's family is still fighting to this day over,
I believe,
you know,
there was a settlement. As far as I heard, it was undisclosed, but I believe something finally came of it.
Do you have any other people that pop out in your 20 years of doing this? Are there people you go, oh, my God, I can't believe this person did that, or this person said that, or, you know, just...
Oh,
just
so many things.
Anything good, anything uncomfortable?
Well, okay, we'll go with the comfortable and the uncomfortable. Here's a comfortable Jack Kirby story. Joe Simon, I'm actually doing some remarks with him on a print, and he's signing stuff for me. And we say, Joe, and he said, can you do the shield? Okay, pulls out his protractor, nice and slow, and puts the shield together. Joe, can you do the Red Skull? Red Skull. Can't remember the Red Skull. Oh, come on, Joe, you remember the Red Skull. Finally, we show him a picture, and he stares at it for 2 minutes in silence. 2 minutes, and points, and goes, how'd he get that tongue in there? And that's him talking about his partner, Jack Kirby, years,
wow,
40 years later, still amazed at how he had done that art. And so there you go. He was the precise, delineated, you know, exact artist in Kirby the Wild, you know, and that's what made Simon and Kirby, probably, if I'm seeing it right, great.
Well, let me ask you. I'll go off on a Kirby tangent.
Straight from the horse's mouth.
We'll go back to your shows after this, but who was your favorite Kirby inker? Mine's Joe Sinnott.
Yeah, I mean, that's the revered one. It has to be. That's the one that's considered by all the artists. You know, I sometimes, when I look at the art, I even have trouble seeing the difference in inkers. Many times I'll look at it, and I'll just look at the square page and just go, wow, that's cool. But when you come down to it, really, really fine line, and look at it, Joe Sinnott is the one that made it great. You know, those Fantastic Fours in what, the 40s and the 50s, there's nothing like them.
Yeah.
The numbers, 40s and 50s.
Absolutely. You're talking about the whole Galactus trilogy with the Surfer.
This,
and
this monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You actually, on this coming up show, not only do you have my two wrestling idols on the show, you have my childhood hero on this show, actually.
And which one is that?
Jason David Frank, the Green Power Ranger.
He's the best.
I met him once, and he's a wonderful human being.
Somehow, him and I just hit it off. I guess the energy level between the two of us would go rocket to the moon, you know? And I liked the guy, and he liked me, and we started talking. He says, look, you got to come to one of my shows once. And then he calls me up. He says, hey, you got a show March 7th? He says, yeah, I'm coming to it.
He says,
what do you need? I'm coming to it. That's it. He's on his way. Yeah, so we put the deal together, and he's...
I was in third grade when Power Rangers came out. So, like, he was, like, the coolest guy on the planet to me. And when I met him, like, 2 years ago, I turned into, like, a little kid again. I was, like, giggly. Like, it was absolutely crazy. The name of the network is White Dragon Podcast Network. It's the name of my network with all the shows on it. It's actually because... the dragon, when he was the Green Ranger, it was the Dragon Zord, and then he became the White Ranger. So I put it together, and it was White Dragon.
Wow, that's cool. I never knew that.
I'm kind of like a super fan.
That's really cool.
That's
good. You got to go up and talk to him at the show, because he's got a lot of plans for the future. He's told me about some of his stuff and shown it to me. It's pretty amazing. I mean, he's a guy who's going to continue in this world and do some amazing stuff.
He's a beast, too. I mean, like, he's fighting MMA right now. Like, he called out CM Punk recently. Like, he wants to fight him.
Oh, yeah, he's ready to rock.
And I watched one of his fights. He's good.
Maybe we can have
him
and Roddy do some stuff together. That'd be fun.
Let's work on that. What we wanted to ask.
All right, let's bring the wrestling.
We wanted to ask you about, but you know, we're going to be.
Speaking of that.
Yeah, Basquad Radio is going to be broadcasting live from your show on March 7th.
Are we really?
In New York City.
Let's go. Come on down, guys.
And I was wondering if you're going to chaperone us around to break the ice.
Sure, let's do like a 10-minute walk around with these guys, and we'll put them all together. We're doing an early admission at 9.
I just had a little nerd stroke. I'm sorry.
We're doing something absolutely
cool. Kevin's drooling out of the one side.
Kevin, you okay?
Yeah. I started this with Stanley, and for the first hour before the regular people in, I actually brought Stanley, and we walked around the dealer's room and just said hello and shook hands and talked to the dealers and got a few pictures. I'm going to be doing an early admission thing. It's a little more expensive, but it's going to be a little more informal, and the celebrities will be walking around and doing a few pictures and say hello and all that. And we're going to have a Big Apple Donuts. I mean, it's the 20-year anniversary, and why is he the Green Power? Why are we having the Green Power Ranger? Because the Green Apple, the Big Apple, is the 20 years. We're going to have balloons that are green. Bring a green thing. Wear a green thing. We got all kinds of cool things going on.
Green.
And you know, speaking of donuts,
I'm actually just looking forward to the Apple donuts.
Oh, the donuts!
Excited.
The donuts are excited here. Let's go! Come and get your donuts here. We got a big box of donuts. Can't eat them all.
Rahway will never be the same. Oh, no.
Smelling comics and eating donuts.
Free donuts.
Here comes the bouncer.
Oh, geez.
Mike, you're not in New York City, boy.
That's okay. I love New Jersey. One of my best friends lives here in Freehold. I'm on my way after the podcast.
Wonderful.
We have to tell everyone.
Wait, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just want
you got me excited.
No, I wanted to commend you for traveling in a very vicious ice storm today.
Yes.
This is
nothing.
This is we're a bunch of wussies.
I'm just scared to walk outside.
Yeah, I had to carry Denny to his car today after work, and drove from New York City.
You guys are here. We're doing a podcast. We're on the radio. This is amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but this is how pathetic we are, guys, compared
how
to
pathetic
Mike.
You are. I drove here from New York, too.
No, you're pathetic, too.
Good, I'm here.
We were supposed to meet Mike up north in Moonaki, New Jersey.
In my friend Anthony Snyder's warehouse. He's got a giant comic book warehouse.
That's great.
And then I called up Mike sniveling, saying, we can't do it. You know, the roads are icy. I'm going to hydroplane. I got to have a Hyundai. Yeah. And Mike drove down here.
You should have seen me. I was doing semicircles on the way here on the Jersey Turnpike. It's a good thing I made it.
Now, what were you going to touch upon?
Okay, you asked me about some things having to do with the show, the good and the bad. I'll tell you some bad.
Frank Lucas. We like
American
bad.
Gangster?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Frank Lucas? I mean, this guy is one of the renowned, revered, scary figures in the world, okay? I mean, this guy was... He went to prison for a long time, and so he comes to my show. I have an agent. Says, Frank Lucas wants to come to your show. Okay, great. I get this agent who's his celebrity agent, but we had never dealt with him before. He had promised him the world to come to the show, and I didn't really find out about it till the end of the first day. And Frank goes, well, I made some money, but you owe me this. I'm like, Frank, what do you mean I owe you this? He said, well, the agent said this, and I never said... Oh, boy, here I am getting into a fight with Frank Lucas.
Oh, my God.
I can't believe it. And I had a partner at the time. He's looking at me. He goes, what are you doing? My Irish, my Italian got up. I don't know. And I continued. He had his nephews, his cousins there, guys bumping into me. I'm going, wait a minute. What are you doing? I mean, this got to be really, like, serious. And my friend just pulled me away. And I'm like, okay, Frank, I'll be back. I came back, Frank, I'm so sorry. I apologize. What do I got to do? He didn't come back the next day, but I paid him that night, and I'm still here. So it's okay. Right. But, you know, that was the one thing. Oh, my gosh. I had Gil Kane at the show.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and, you
great
know.
Great artist.
Carmine Infantino, guys that have passed away. Julius Schwartz, the editor for DC Comic Books. I say, what does anybody want my autograph for? Put a gorilla on the cover. It'll sell twice as fast. I mean, he was great.
Your show's got me to meet Jerry Robinson right before he died.
Yeah.
He died after that show, and I got to meet him. It was just one of the greatest moments of my life.
He told me thank you. He told me the Robin story. Does anyone know Robin story? I mean, Robin Hood was one of his favorite characters as a kid. He loved the Robin Hood films. So the green, the name, Jerry Robinson, it just somehow worked out, and that's how Batman got it. And then I asked Joe Simon once, I said, what were these sidekicks? Why'd Bucky say, everybody had a sidekick. I just had to give him one. So sometimes it comes from a past, or sometimes it just comes out of, like, you got to compete with the compete with the people doing
well. Jerry Robinson and Bob Kane didn't always see eye to eye, and they fought for decades over who created the Joker.
Still fighting up there somewhere.
Yeah.
Who created comic convention up in the sky?
But if you're gonna fight, you fight over the Joker.
I'm coming.
They fought over who created the Joker, and it was actually Bill Finger.
Ah.
Yeah. It was none of them.
There you go. Exactly.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Mike, I have a selfish question.
Good.
Are you gonna have any? Any Walking Dead people there?
Yes, we got two of the guys coming from The Walking Dead.
Don't get me too excited.
We got two of the guys. One guy had an eye put in a zombie, a stake put through his heart. Another guy got split in half. It's great. We got two of the guys.
Nice.
And maybe a third surprise guy coming. We can't announce it yet.
Oh, interesting.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Would you like a 1966 Batmobile parked out front of the show?
Positively.
I can make that happen for you. I have four or five friends with beautiful 1966 Batmobile replicas.
Talk about for other people.
What?
Look at him making promises for other people.
Okay,
I'm promoting now. Besides running this Big Apple convention, I also did for the first time in Queens, and we called it the WinterCon, and it kind of ends the convention season, and it was such a super success. It was a Queens comic book convention. Comic book celebrities, cosplay, but next year we already got like six vehicles coming to the show.
So you're unretired.
In the casino. Yeah, I'm unretired.
Mike's unretired.
That's the way it seems.
Good.
You know,
The convention world is a lot like the wrestling world. You always retire and you unretire.
Yeah. That'd be like the Rolling Stones
retire.
You can't
get away from it. I mean, I like the action. I like staying involved. I like being part of the comic book community, the dealers, right. the fans. You know, if one guy comes up to me and says, Mike, I had a great time at the show, literally that makes my day, and that's one of the reasons we do it. Yeah, we all do it for the money, but if you counted it up, I like to buy and sell comic books. I could do a lot.
If only you had more energy.
Yeah,
Mike's the most energetic human being on the
He's
planet.
He's the anti-Burly.
I feel like a desiccated corpse.
Right.
The anti-Burly.
I mean, everyone, I'm reading off a little list of people because there's so many, like Burt Ward, Adam West, Howie Chaykin, Carmen, Kristen Bell. Okay, she was great. She came on just the Sunday. Kevin Smith, first he used to come to the show when it was in the church. He loved the church basement for a comic convention.
Yeah.
I mean, that was wonderful. And then finally I said to him, well, you come as a guest to buy stuff. And hey, why don't you come and do it one of the shows? He said, okay. You know, and he came and
That's
he
great.
Hung out and did it and did it there. It was great. Steven Seagal. Oh, God. I had the wrong hotel for Steven Seagal. We didn't pick him up till an hour later. He says, I thought it was not going to happen. I mean, you know, and then he had the most dour face and just signed all day. I think that might be the only convention that he ever did, so to speak.
Richard I never Dreyfuss. Heard of him on the concert.
No.
Richard Dreyfuss we had. So
wow,
now,
really? Richard
I'm talking
Dreyfuss?
About all these different people, and you know, it's kind of interesting. And comic conventions, and I've been doing them since the 70s as a
you
dealer,
write
as a
book.
Conventioner. So I remember them, and if you came dressed as a superhero, you were the odd person
yes,
out.
You were a freak.
You know,
you were a social pariah. It was disturbing. You thought maybe the person was unhinged and would hurt you.
Great name for a superhero, the pariah. I mean, I'm going to start working on that. Okay, anybody want some ideas? We'll find us an artist.
I want to ask you about that cosplay. Mm. What do you think of cosplay?
Costume play.
Now, cosplay is actually overtaken.
I like the girls. They're awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, the women look amazing. These X-Men women, they come dressed. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're amazing.
But
you know?
Did you ever think, growing up in the 60s and 70s, that this would be, like the nerds are cool now.
Yeah,
I don't know if it'll
last,
but right now, nerd culture is cool and hot, and you've certainly
Geek
done your...
Geek chic right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm saying, this whole combination. And at some point, I was doing the church, and you asked when we saw it succeed. And Vinny and I kept banging our heads, like I said, to get it over that 2000 hump. And then all of a sudden, I think Vinny said, why don't we add a few different things? What? I don't know, some Star Wars guys, a few wrestlers. Okay. And then actually people, and we had a show where that happened, and people were coming, oh, what are you doing? They're not comic book people. They're this and that. And I'm like, well, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And we do it, and it started to bring the people on a different element, but they're still part of it, and it still made it exciting. And we kept doing that and kept filling it. And lo and behold, San Diego and all these other shows started filing suit a few years later. Now, I'm not saying I started it all, but in some ways, you know, we began building that combination of pop culture, as you said, the complete package.
Mike, you are absolutely right, because I'm a year or two older than these other guys.
Yeah.
And I went to shows back in the day, and it was 99.9% men.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
not the finest of the men. Mike's was the first shows. A Carbo show was women were coming in.
Young
ladies. Yeah,
Carbo
no,
con.
No,
I
like no. That. You made it socially acceptable for mm-hmm. everyone.
Gee, you know, I have a story. I did fall off the roof of Studio 54 trying to get in way back.
Did you?
Five floors straight down. Boom, 50 feet. I still got the pins in this arm and in this leg to talk about it.
Wow.
So that's a real New Yorker.
I got eight lives left, and I'm going to use them all, I'll tell you. So socially acceptable. The doormen still bother me when they don't let you into a place. You
did, did you regenerate at the end of it like the doctor?
I'll tell you. Yeah. It literally was the power of visualization. They told me I wouldn't walk straight. One leg would be shorter than the other, and I swear I had a dream, and I saw a black background and a white bone, and I heard this sound. And I remember I woke up the next day, and a few weeks later, doctors came in. Your x-rays are looking better. I mean, yeah, I went through a few years of physical therapy, but nevertheless, power of visualization, it's an amazing thing.
Wow, falling off of Studio 54, you've lived a life, my friend.
Yes, I have,
it's
and still, I'm still doing
still
it.
Still doing it. That's
mm-hmm.
great. That's
I just
fantastic.
Came back this weekend. I was on a buying trip. Last week, I was in Portland, Oregon. Then I was in Los Angeles when we were talking, trying to set up this meet.
That's right.
Then my dad's in San Diego because I sent him there because these winters are too harsh. He's 88.
Uh-huh.
So I sent him. I went down to visit him, stayed there for a few hours, then flew back to Portland, and here I am in New York on Sunday. I came back. So I'll be in Wisconsin on Wednesday.
Oh, okay, great.
Man, now you, for you, the Wizard Con.
But you didn't. You weren't at the Super Bowl yesterday, right?
I tried. I was on my thoughts, but no, I had too much stuff to do. We went last year, but this damn Seattle, they ruined it. It was over before it began, but this year they didn't win, so.
I actually didn't even watch the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for the last 2 years, my wife and I just haven't watched it. We're not football people, so like at the end of the day, like we're like, why watch it if we're not football people?
That's because you're not a man.
Kevin was doing laundry.
Yeah, and cooking and cleaning. And
Kevin was cooking, so.
You know, maybe it's a little cliche, but, you know, one of the reasons I love football, and I've gotten to like it more as I've gotten a little older, you know, it's that microcosm of things, and you just got to stay the course, and, you know, the world is so varied now, and there's so much competition in just about everything. You got to have that clear vision and clear path and clear belief in what you have. And you see the guys that do it and the guys that practice certain situations and know things that might happen. That's where you succeed. And, you know, in a convention world, it's kind of almost like that.
I could see that.
You know, I remember the one show, the hurricane was coming. There's a hurricane coming the day of my event, the day of my show here in New York City, a hurricane. I actually was on the steps of the church screaming the night before going, I'm in the eye of the hurricane. There is no hurricane. It's okay. And literally, I mean, dealers were calling me. I can't make it. I say, if you don't make it, I'll never sell you another table again. You can't come to any of my shows. That was when I was the only con in town, so I had a little more, power.
That's
but
great.
I'm telling you, you have to have that, you know, and then dealing with agents and dealing with celebrities and dealing with the people and the fans and the dealers. It's a combination, a plethora of things.
Yeah, and trying to deal with Dave.
Oh, no, but people that live in California and Florida and the milder weather states, they don't realize how tough it is to make something happen on the East Coast. Because something goes down weather-wise, you're screwed. You can't fight Mother Nature. I mean, you know.
And there you go. Here comes my Monday story.
Oh, wow.
I believe that I have done, and if anyone else out there has ran a Monday comic convention, please call in and tell us. I give you free admission for the rest of your life, okay, to any of my shows. So we had a show, and the snow was coming, and here it is, and there was nothing I could do about it. And it was the best Saturday morning we ever had, but by 3 o'clock, it was a ghost town, the show. It was empty. The snow's coming down. I'm counting each flake. That's another dollar. That's another dollar. That's another buck, literally. We called it off for the Sunday. The hotel gave me the Monday. So I did a free admission Monday, carried it over. Some of the dealers didn't, and called Joe Simon and said, Joe, you got to come. He came down, did sketches for people, hung out, and we actually had a successful event when it was all said and done.
That's fantastic.
So you just, you know, again, you just never know.
Wow. I mean, I feel like we're not even scratching the surface of all the stories we probably have.
No.
knocking on the door.
Here's what I told the guys to prep for the show. I said, go to Wiki. And Google you.
I did.
And Google the show.
Now
and
I'm then, in trouble. No, my old girlfriends are coming back. And wives.
No, you should Wikipedia yourself and the show because someone took the time to list all of the big name guests in the industry.
Yeah. And I just wrote this thing out. Gee, I should have gone to there and printed it. Forget it.
What the notes you brought about yourself is nothing compared to what we found on Wiki.
Well, yeah,
you have had some of
the
biggest names in the comic book industry, celebrities.
If we put these all together, this would be the World's Fair of conventions.
Yeah.
Which is actually, hint, hint, an idea that I've got coming. We'll talk about that more in a future episode.
Oh, okay.
How do you I do want to touch upon it without sounding like sour grapes or being too negative. How do you feel about these mega shows now that lock people in and just like they're all about the money?
Actually, I've had a relationship with the Wizard people, and I really like the Wizard conventions, and I've actually been doing them. I just did the one
in Wizard too.
Tulsa, Oklahoma, which was actually amazing. It was lines around the block for it all day. Sacramento, they've got one in Madison, Wisconsin this coming weekend, and that's where I'll be, and then they'll be in Cleveland, and I really like the Wizard shows. These bigger shows, you know, they're great, but even San Diego, it's so much time. Effort,
right.
Dealing it. It's a week to prep, a week to decompress, a week there, and then the rules and regulations. You do it because you got to be part of it. But that was the one thing about my show, and I never wanted to or did get to that bigger spot. I always wanted to be enough where I was almost hands-on or could manage it. You know, 10,000 people, okay? And you could walk up to the stars. You could see them. You never were not able to get to somebody who was at one of my shows. You know, you made it. Even if I had to make them stay a half hour longer because there was a line and pay them more money, whatever I had to do, I did that. And the dealers that were there, and occasionally people wouldn't show up. I try and make up for it. You give people refunds. You do what you do. But all in all, that's part of the appeal of
you
a
even
small
had,
event.
Yes, and you had one of my many childhood heroes, Lee Majors. Was that one of your shows?
Yeah.
Lee Majors,
sure.
Not easy to get. For a while, Lee Majors didn't do a show for decades. He did not embrace his $6 million man past or his Big Valley past. And that's the thing about your shows. But do you think, and again, not throwing stones at anyone, do you think the Wizard people studied your template and your business plan and said, you know what, let's take that to the next level?
Yeah, and when they're still trying to do it. They're still trying to bring an event to New York that's maybe not as big as Comic-Con, maybe in between. You know, there should,
what's bigger
still
than
room.
Jacob Javits, though?
But, you know, there could be a room for a 20, 25,000, 30,000 people show. Javits is what? 50,000
right,
a day, 100,000 right. over a weekend or more.
Well, they have special
but
edition.
They're a great show, the big show in New York, you know, the Comic Con.
Me and
it's
Danny.
Awesome. And I love it. And I do the show and buy as many tables. And that show I really, really like because it's right here at home. You know, I have so many friends that are coming to the show. And we buy a dozen tables for the show, literally. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, as members of the press, we go to all these shows.
Remember that first one that they had? That was so packed, it was sold out. And people couldn't even get in. Remember that first Comic Con at the Javits? That was crazy, right?
Felt like that. It's on the
they
Saturday,
always
on the,
do.
On the Saturday,
yeah.
You couldn't move.
Oh yeah.
No.
But that's fun. You
I
know,
went.
That's
I went all
it.
4 they, days. My wife and
I
all
like
4 days.
The new. I like the Comic Con. It's great. You know, Wizard Comic Con. I can't say anything bad. I love any comic
no,
convention. You can put me in a bowling alley, like you said, and I'll love it.
Yep.
You know, I mean. I'll tell you some of the first shows I used to run, and it wasn't. I did them at the American Legion Hall for like a dozen years in the 80s. I had my comic store in Forest Hills, and then I'd do it in the American Legion Hall. I had free admission, and I had 40 tables. But I owned all the tables in the room.
So I had all my
friends doing it. They'd give me a chart. Here's the money you made. And they'd all be handing me a pile of cash at the end of the day.
Wow.
It was great.
I used to go to your early shows.
Neil Allen.
Yeah.
Sports celebrity, right? One of the relievers for the New York Mets way back.
Yep.
But here's another thing. Mike's been doing this for so long. And early on, I'd never introduced myself to you, even a couple years ago at Asbury Park. Mm-hmm. But in your shows in the mid-90s, I'm talking a 96, 97 show, I could kick myself. We all could kick ourselves. You could buy a piece of original artwork by Gene Colan for $15. You could buy a piece of artwork by John Buscema for $20. These are $1,000 pages now. It's sickening.
That's a whole nother story. This the collectible world, the investment world, the turning them into commodities, what they are, comic books now, and a CGC.
It's big money.
And a plastic holder and the artwork. But yeah, the artwork is the thing. I mean, 100 to 1 if you had bought art in the 90s. You know, so that's part of the appeal of this whole world. You know, it does go in waves. And right now with the movies, the comics from the 70s are charging. Nova, Ms. Mystic, Ms. Marvel, all of them. I mean, they're going, you know, the Avengers, Hellcat, you know, the Ant-Man. He was on the cover of Entertainment Weekly. Thor was on GQ. And somebody else was on something else. I looked at the newsstand and there it was, the Avengers.
Yeah.
Nerd culture has become popular culture.
Yep, it's no longer, you know,
it's nothing.
It's no longer in the shadows.
And people of a certain age remember this. One of my best friends, Nick, maybe we'll have Nick on one time, but first day of seventh grade, we used to hide our comic books in our loose leaf binders, and it was, you would not want to be caught by cheerleaders, football, jocks, anyone. It was such a shameful thing back then to collect comics and trade them. And now we're here smelling them.
Got my new comic book right here.
We're here snorting comics.
Thor is a woman. And here you go, the secret inside.
Oh, right. Oh, that's another
that's
thing.
That's a great cover, though. Look at that. That's a cool cover. Upside down.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this. We'll keep it very relevant. How do you feel about Marvel yet again rebooting the universe?
Don't know. Got to read it, right? But you know what? Here's the secret. Marvel's little secret in the 60s, what made us love Marvel comic books? Maybe as much or a little bit more than the DC comics. They created a club.
They felt real.
Okay, you had the Hulk appear over in crossover in Tales to Astonish with Giant
Man.
You had the Avengers, you know, with everybody. You know, Ant-Man appeared in so-and-so's book. You know, and they built this little Merry Marvel Marching Society, and they had records and things, and you run around and you become part of Spider-Man Fantastic Four. You know, they were always hanging out. Johnny Storm and Peter Parker, right?
Right.
That was it. So we felt like we owned that, and that was ours. And then what did they do? This wonderful idea. Hey, let's build a team. And they made it part of the movies. And that was the absolute genius stroke. And now we can talk about it.
Yep.
So what they're going to do with this next level of characters, I'm sure it'll be interesting. I'm sure they've thought it out. I'm sure they've got it figured out till the year 2042, probably.
That's
you know, the way Disney does Marvel and all that. But still... I'll be interested to see what they'll do. It's going to just really be it's going to be very cool.
I want to ask you one last thing. I think we're going to wrap it up. Now that you're unretired from Comic-Con promotion,
so
I mean, you are a force of nature. Mm-hmm. You're just a bundle of raw energy. What's next on the horizon? You have March 7th. It's the show we're all going to be at. What are you going to do after this?
BigAppleCon.com. There you go. That's the website. Okay, so like I alluded to, I've got an idea. The World's Fair of Comic Conventions, you know, and they do these things. You know, I loved World's Fair since I was a kid. 1964 New York World's Fair. I remember going to 7-Up Pavilion. You get free 7-Up. I kept going back.
So funny. You know, another one of my shows coming out this week, Two Men and the Mouse, our Disney podcast. We actually were just talking about the World's Fair. We were doing a retrospective on the Carousel of Progress, which
started
there.
The Unisphere. Your Men in Black Unisphere. Yep. Was the symbol of that. The Trilon and Perisphere going back to the 1939 New York World's Fair. You know, maybe we can create a World's Fair of Comics that
That'd
every four
wonderful.
Or 5 years or 6 years comes around and becomes the mega beyond your wildest dreams kind of event. But
that sounds like a dream come true.
I've got a show in Queens going on, and it's the WinterCon, and it's going to be absolutely amazing. Next year we changed it from this year. Last year was a 1-day event. This year it's going to be 2 days, and I'm going to put a lot of energy into that. And I've got a partner named Frank who runs EternalCon out in Long Island, and I think that's going to be something else. But right now, after this show, I'm going to concentrate on buying comic books, and I want every collection I can find and pay everybody the most that I can pay for their stuff and just pile up the comics till I can't see out of my back of my warehouse, which we have a giant warehouse. I work with this company called David Adams Card World / Get Cash for Comics, and they just bought a 50,000 square foot superstore in Tonawanda / Buffalo, New York,
right.
And I guess I might be part of the reason they bought it, so I can fill it up. Citizen Kane.
Would you say that Mike's energy is somewhat contagious?
Yes, definitely. I wish we could
even Denny's smiling.
There you go, guys.
I think he's very, very, very interesting.
He's the Mick Jagger of Comic-Con promoters.
Extremely rare for me to say that.
Comments I can deliver die with, but the Mick Jagger are okay.
I honestly wish we could keep this going for another hour, but unfortunately we're nearing the time.
Why don't we table this and do a part two post show?
Yes. I would love that.
Okay,
that
done. Yes.
We can talk to you at the show if you're not too busy.
We'll do a post two out right back here, same spot,
great,
same place.
Wonderful.
And we'll do a little bit
goosebumps.
At the show.
Wonderful.
Okay, and why don't we give away a few tickets to some of your listeners if they want? We'll work that out later. You call
great,
in
wonderful.
The first
sure.
four people that call in get free early admission at passes for the show.
Oh, that's
50
wonderful.
Bucks
that's very
a
generous
hit.
If you think.
Did
okay.
you did you enjoy the New Jersey donuts?
Oh yeah, that were great, man. I'm going to chomp on more of them right now. Come and get your Big Apple donuts at the show, or bring a box of donuts to the convention and pass them out.
All right, so I just want to go through everything one more time, folks. It's Mike Carbo's Big Apple Con, March 7th, Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. 20-year anniversary of the show, located in the Penn Plaza Pavilion, 401 7th Avenue and 33rd Street, right across from Madison Square Garden. You can find tickets on sale at www.nycbm.com, folks. This is not a show you want to miss. Bat Squad Radio is going to be there, but of course there's going to be a slew of celebrity guests. Jason David Frank. You got Rowdy Piper. You got Jake the Snake Roberts. You have so many comic book writers, creators, artists, so much going on there. Definitely a can't miss show.
There's one last thing that Mike Carbo would like to say to our listeners.
What's that?
Excelsior!
There we go. Well, folks, on that note, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Bat Squad Radio. I want to thank our very special guest, Mike Carbo. Thank you so much for coming out, having a good time with us here tonight. This has been my very favorite episode of Bat Squad Radio. Yeah, seriously. Folks, thank you so much for joining us once again this week. If you want to follow us on Facebook, find our Facebook discussion group, facebook.com/group/Bat Squad Radio. We're always on there having conversations with the listeners. We definitely also would like to thank the Firehouse Eatery and Pub here in Rahway, New Jersey for such a spectacular, letting us host the interview here in this spectacular venue. Folks, it's right on Route 35, right on St. George Avenue. Come on down, enjoy it. A lot of really great food here. We were noshing on the appetizers before. Really, really great. So, folks, that's going to do it once again for Bat Squad Radio this week. Dave, any closing words?
I'm just beyond thrilled. I want to thank Mike again. That was awesome.
It
was
guys,
all.
Thank you.
This hour was all I hoped it would be. Thanks, buddy.
Yep, yeah, Denny, any closing words? You said maybe like 10 combined words this entire hour. So,
Mike, all I have to say is, wow.
All right.
Denny, Denny is beaming. I've known Denny for 12 years. He's never beamed like he's beaming tonight.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, guys. This is wonderful to talk about this. It's just great. Thank you.
Thank you so much, folks. We will see you next time on Bat Squad Radio. Same Bat Squad time, same Bat Squad channel.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at WhiteDragonPN.